Thank you for starting that song again so we could hear it. Thank you so much. Before we start our topic on the Word this morning, you have my card on the pews. Many of you have asked me on the website, what is my ministry, how to get the videos that I'm showing, et cetera, et cetera. So if you didn't get one, we can get one to you later. My ministry is called Jesus 101 Biblical Institute and is one of the six official ministries of the North American Division. We have six ministries sponsored by the North American Division: Voice of Prophecy, It Is Written, Breath of Life, Faith for Today, La Voz. And it had been 25 years since we had opened a brand new media ministry. So this is the new one that we opened 5 years ago, Jesus 101 Biblical Institute. And it is designed for in-depth Bible study. So we produce resources and resources and resources for pastors, for seekers, for people that have never heard about Christ but want to go deeper into the scriptures once they hear about the scriptures. So we have literally hundreds of resources for you, and most of them are free. So we have 4 channels on iTunes. We have Plug Into Life, which is a 1-minute devotional every morning that we have about 80,000 people that signed up in the first month that listen every single morning to the 1 minute. And we have 12 minutes on biblical studies every morning if you want to do your devotional with us and want to create sermons around it. If you go to Facebook and go to Jesus 101 Institute and like us, you will get 4 different resources every day. We have audiobooks for free. As a matter of fact, this morning's topic that will be on the Gospel of Mark, you have the free audiobook on Mark that you can download. We have many, many resources for you. So I'm really hoping you will download our apps and your Androids and your whatever it is that you use. We use every possible social media venue to try to bring these resources to the whole world. So I am hoping that you will use it. It's there for you. And that's why the North American Division started this ministry. So now that you know, you have our website. If you have any questions, you can reach us on this website or on Facebook or in many other places. And I don't want to spend any more time on that, so we're going to get started with our sermon for today.
Okay, guys, what is faith?
Faith is... it's kind of like a... could you hold the camera? I just...
faith. God? Faith? It's not far.
Faith is when you have courage to do something and you do it and you believe you can do it.
If you like think that you can't do something, but then you believe that you can do it.
It's when you believe something before you see it.
And you're obeying God. Is that right? Or is that the wrong answer?
Faith is believing without seeing.
You can feel it and you can see it in your head before you see it.
Believing that something's going to happen and trusting God.
Faith is believing in something that you cannot see, feel, or have any way of seeing it. Well, you can actually see it, but I mean, like, you can see it. Having faith is like seeing it in the future.
Believe it or not, we ourselves are a little more confused than those kids were. When I go through the field to teach ministerial associations and groups, if I say, what is the core kerygma, the core proclamation of our church, and what does righteousness by faith mean, I will get a lot more different answers than even those kids gave. So we call many things the gospel, we call many things righteousness by faith, and hopefully we're getting closer and closer to understanding what is the core. Because until the gospel is preached through the whole world, Jesus won't come, and I really want him to come. I was 5 years old when I was saving for a bicycle. My dad was a pastor. We didn't have a lot of money in Argentina, and I was getting 5 cents here, 20 cents there. And one day my dad says, "We're going to take a little trip today." And he was the president of the conference, so he went to see this woman twice a year that owned a hotel in the mountains of Buenos Aires, which is called Tandil. And she had a hotel and put all her offerings and tithes together twice a year and gave them to my dad because there was no church around, so she gave it to the conference president. So my dad said, "We're taking a little trip today," and so my mom and I went with him, and we got there, and there was a round table, and I remember it as it was yesterday, that I sat down, and my eyes could barely see above the table, and this woman brought a bag full of money. I mean, full of money, something that she could barely bring into the room. And for the first time in my life, I was quiet. I mean, I saw so much money, and I saw this woman start giving away money. You know, and so she started putting these piles of money on the table and naming them. This is for evangelism, and this is for Sabbath school, and this is for this. And I was barely breathing because I was sure there was a pile for me. I mean, why would you bring me to this place if I'm saving for my bicycle? You know, and for sure somebody's going to give me something. So I'm not even speaking when this woman ran out of money. And I got this desperate feeling. And there comes a time when a woman has to do what a woman has to do. And I got off my chair. And I stood there in my five-year-old frame, and with all my lungs, I yelled out, "And for my bicycle!" My parents, of course, "Shh, shh, this is the money of the Lord." "Well, isn't there a little bit for my bicycle?" "Shh, we'll explain it to you later." You know, someday I'll have a talk with this woman in heaven because she didn't give me one peso. She could have given me one peso from somewhere, but she didn't. But that was not the point. The point is, was that the first time in my life that I felt invisible in my church. It was the first time that there seemed to be enough for that person and for that person and for that group and for that ministry and for my bicycle. Well, I didn't know that many times later in my life I would ask the same question. Because, you know, you go to those testimony meetings where everybody had a miracle and all of a sudden your mother has cancer and she's not being healed. And for my bicycle. And everybody's marriage seems to get better except yours, and you go, "And for my bicycle." You know, so in my family, this sentence became a request for more. So today, if my dad wants more dessert, he'll put his plate up and say, "And for my bicycle?" So, perhaps the greatest thing that happened in the Gospels was the breakthrough that there was enough for everybody. And this was a breakthrough that was so hard because the disciples in the Gospel of Mark are so dense. And Peter has such a big mouth. You know, when we understand that something's only for us, and hey, if you're not getting the miracle, you must not have enough faith. Well, I tell you, I have faith. And I anointed my mother this last Sabbath because she's dying of cancer. So every once in a while, things work a little different than you expected them. And at some point, we got to know what is the core of the gospel. And we see pastors that are very confused out there, and they're confusing their congregations. And today, hopefully, we'll go through the breakthrough of the gospel of Mark, which is the only one of the four gospels that calls his gospel a gospel. He starts in the first verse by saying this is the beginning of the gospel, the evangelion of Jesus Christ. And he will have to train, Jesus will have to train his disciples to see a God greater than their own brains. Which is always hard because, you know, you want to grasp something and say, well, there was enough for me. And somebody up there that worships with the hands over here says, is there enough for my bicycle? And then somebody worships like this. Is there enough for my bicycle? Is there enough for the drums people? Is there enough for their bicycle? So all of a sudden, all of us throughout history have tried to say, no, there's only enough for me. If you don't think or dress exactly like me, there's not enough for you. So this breakthrough has been the greatest challenge I received in my own ministry and in my own life through the reading of the Gospels. And I'm going to ask you to go with me to Mark chapter 6. And I warn you, this would be a challenge today. If you want to know more about the sandwich stories of the Gospel of Mark, you have Dr. Shepherd here in this campus, and you will learn more from him about that. But today we're going to concentrate in a section of the scriptures that actually is the breakthrough for the disciples who were so dense. All of us are so dense. And I imagine Jesus in the Gospels going like this so many times. When his disciples gave answers going, oh, they didn't get it. Chapter 6 to 8 of Mark is the breakthrough. 19 occurrences of the word bread are found in these three chapters. Jesus will use a very common symbol of daily life in the first century, the bread. They worked for their daily bread. They got paid every day so they could buy bread. And of the 22 occurrences of the word bread in Mark, 19 of them will be in these three chapters, this conglomeration of the topic of Mark in chapters 6, 7, and 8, where the breakthrough will happen. And in a very important part of the gospel, and perhaps we should look a little bit at what the narrative structure of Mark is, so you know why it's happening in a very, very specific place. And I want to show you where it's happening. It's happening exactly in the middle of Mark. See, Mark is divided in two big places, the first half and the second half. And the first half, everybody's asking the same question, who is this? And the answer is, he's the authoritative Son of God who is doing all these miracles. But the second half will be about Jesus' death. So we have these pivotal verses and the middle that are the three first passion predictions that we have in this gospel, 8:31, 9:31, and 10:33. And of course, the climactic verse, 10:45, come to give my life a ransom for many. But perhaps you need to know that there are three stories in two steps right before that pivotal place. Because they saw part of it, but they didn't see all of it. So you get three different things in two steps, showing that they didn't have it all clear. And that's where you get the little strange miracle that I have heard very strange sermons about, on that two-step blind man that gets to see in two steps. And only Mark has it right in this context, because he saw a little bit, but he saw like trees walking. And then he's going to see more, because Jesus is about to explain the second half of who he is. He's the Son of Man, and he must die for our sins. So in this particular section, the first of those three stories are the feedings. And I pray that the Holy Spirit will teach us what we need to hear. Mark chapter 6, let's start on verse 35. When it was already quite late, his disciples came to him and said, "This place is desolate and is already quite late. Send them away so that they may go into the surrounding countries." But he answered to them, "You give them something to eat." And they said to him, "Shall we go and spend 200 denarii on bread and give them something to eat?" And he starts asking questions. Don't forget, 19 times we have the word bread in these three chapters, because he's about to teach them something. And he starts asking for numbers. How many loaves, of course the Greek says loaves of bread, do you have? Go look. And when they found, they said, 5 and 2 fish. And the whole context of where we are sitting will be given to you in social political terms and numbers and words so that you know we are in Jewish territory. We are in the place where God is supposed to feed his people. We have the whole Old Testament vernacular coming up here. We have people sitting in groups of hundreds and fifties because we are with the new Moses who's going to, in desolate place, feed the people. Verse 39, and he commanded them to sit down by groups in the green grass, and they sat down in groups of hundreds and fifties. And he did four things that were very important verbs. He took the loaves, and he blessed the food, and he broke the loaves, and he gave the loaves to the disciples to sit before them, and he divided the two fish among them. So he did these four things. He took, and he blessed, and he broke, and he gave, and they all ate. And they all were satisfied, and that's the way it's supposed to be, because we're sitting in a church and our bellies are full, and they were all satisfied, and there was plenty for Israel. As a matter of fact, they picked up some bread that was left over, and they picked up 12 full baskets. And the numbers are so important because everything in this story is either 5 or 12, because these were the numbers of Israel. So you have 5 because of the law and 12 because of the tribes, and you have the 5,000 being fed. Everybody's satisfied. But then we start getting something very interesting. Verse 42, they all ate and were satisfied, and they picked up 12 full baskets. And the word for baskets is kofinos, which is a very interesting word. It was a basket that the Jews would use. So it was associated with their culture and who they were. And we're going to be told at the end that the 12 baskets are full and that they have 5,000 men who have eaten, and we are all happy and Israel is satisfied. So here we have, let's count them to make sure. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. So Israel is fed and is full and is satisfied, and there is a basket left for each tribe. But then something weird happens. Jesus starts talking crazy. Verse 45. Immediately Jesus made his disciples, made, very strong verb in the Greek, he made the disciples get into the boat and go ahead of him to the other side. And those of you that have learned about Mark, you know that other side in Mark means, oh my. The other side is where you get the cooties. You don't go to the other side. The other side in Mark, constantly you're told if you're in this side or in the other side. In the other side, you have demons and possessed people and pigs and all kinds of things. On this side, we're safe. And so Jesus says, we have to go to the other side. And the disciples are going, what? You must be kidding us. And so he says, no, we got to go to the other side. And the storm comes. And of course, you know that in the first century, they believed that the evil forces lived in the bodies of water. And of course, they're going to think a storm is coming. Of course, we're going to the other side. We should never have gone there. And I'm not making this up. Verse 51, when Jesus shows up and says, take courage, it is I, do not be afraid. 51, then he got into the boat with them, and the wind stopped, and they were utterly astonished. Look at verse 52. For they had not gained any insight from the incident of the loaves of bread. What does that have to do with anything? What do you mean they were afraid in the storm because they didn't understand the bread? What does the bread have to do with anything? Well, now it has to do with a lot of things. So in these three chapters, we get bread after bread after bread, because the 12 basket full was just the beginning. And I wish we had a whole week for these three chapters, but we don't. So I have to take you directly to the breakthrough event. So let's summarize what we just saw. We saw the feeding of the 5,000 with the numbers 5 and 12, very important numbers for Israel. Then we have four verbs that Jesus does. And we have them all satisfied. Their bellies are full. And these are the baskets of the Jews, in the Greek, kophinos. But now we got to go to the other side. And the breakthrough is going to happen in verse 24. We're going to go to Tyre and Sidon, the place where the evil Jezebel used to come from, that took all of the people of Israel and put them astray from the real God, and they were worshiping Baal. And so we are in really unclean, unholy territory. And verse 24 of chapter 7, and I wish we could go over the first part of chapter 7, which also has to do with bread, because they come and said, how come your disciples are eating bread with unclean hands? And Jesus says, oh, I got to teach you people what unclean is. And actually, the word bread is there in the Greek, and sometimes the translations don't put it there. But we have bread in all three chapters. So then we have on verse 24, Jesus got up and went away from there to the region of Tyre, and everybody would go, oh, what? And when he had entered a house, he wanted no one to know of it, and they could not escape notice. And then, after hearing of him, a woman whose little daughter had an unclean spirit immediately came and fell at his feet. Now, the next sentence, we call it a crescendo of demerit. We can't get any worse. She was a woman, a Gentile, and of the Syrophoenician race. Sounds like some of the letters I get. You are a woman, pastor, Latino? Come on. How bad can it get? The woman was a Gentile of the Syrophoenician race, and she kept asking him to cast the demon out of the daughter. And instead of a hidden person that knew nothing about God, we find an insightful woman who engages with Jesus in a talk about what topic? Bread. There will be a riddle about bread, because this is for the disciples to learn. And so Jesus gives the expected answer. And this riddle of bread is just most amazing. He was saying to her, verse 27, let the children be, here's your main word, satisfied first. It is not good to take the children's bread and give it to the dogs, is it? And this woman understands the riddle. And she says, oh, the children can have their bread. That's okay. They can have it first. There's plenty for them. But she answers in the riddle manner. She said to him, yes, Lord, but even the dogs under the table feed on the children's crumbs. Jesus says, well, I see here, they were satisfied. And she says, yes, but there is enough for my bicycle. And Jesus says, yes, there is. And she says, I never seen so much faith like this, that you know there is enough for everyone. And so she does the miracle, and is the breakthrough in the Gospel of Mark. So let's bring up the breakthrough. Riddle of the bread. In the middle is the Syrophoenician woman. Jesus says the children should be satisfied. And she says, yeah, but there's enough for my bicycle. Is there enough for your bicycle? Is there enough for black and white, for men and women, for old and young? Is there enough for those who worship like this and those who worship like that? Is there enough? Well, let me tell you, there's enough for everybody's bicycle. So one of the main things we have to come to learn at some point is that you don't lose your identity by allowing others their identity. Don't forget that. Don't forget that, because many people, what happens is this. Many people think that if I allow you your identity, I have lost mine. But it's not like that. There is enough for everyone. And so what happens is the next feeding is on the other side. So let's go to chapter 8. Oh, yes. Now I'm going to preach. Chapter 8. Chapter 8 of Mark. We start with the 4,000, which we already are starting with the wrong number, because we're on the other side and the four corners of the earth were understood in the first century geographically to mean everybody. So we start chapter 8, verse 1. In those days, there was again a large crowd and they had nothing to eat. Jesus called his disciples and said to them, I feel compassion. See, the disciples, it's so cool. If we had a lot of time, so many details. The disciples don't bring up the need to feed these people like they did on the first feeding. Jesus brings it up. So Jesus says, I feel compassion for the people because they have remained with me now 3 days, have nothing to eat. And if I send them away hungry to their homes, they will faint on the way. And some of them have come a great distance. And his disciples are a little reluctant. Where will anyone find enough bread here in this desolate place to satisfy these people? And he was asking them, how many loaves do you have? And now the number has changed. How many loaves do we now have? How many? I think it's important that I pause for a moment and I tell you what seven meant for the geography of the map in the first century. You know, we always hear about seven theologically, but I want you to know what geographically it meant. And I'm going to take you to one place and you can write the other. Leave your finger there and go to the book of Acts so that you know what the Markan audience understood with this seven. So go to the book of Acts and I'm going to give you some more references. Chapter 13. Verse 19, I want you to know exactly what seven meant geographically and ethnically. Acts 13, 19, when he had destroyed the seven nations in the land of Canaan, he distributed their land as an inheritance. Okay? Every time you see seven geographically in the first century, it's talking about the seven nations that Israel would destroy and take over Canaan. You can read about it in Deuteronomy chapter 7, verse 1. You'll get the seven names of the seven nations that God promised they would displace from Canaan. Okay, so you have the seven nations. And as a matter of fact, if you really want to go into this, and we don't have a lot of time, that's too bad, because in the book of Acts, there is a problem at the beginning in the church, and it has to do with the Greek widows not getting enough food, not the regular Jewish widows. So they name seven deacons who have seven Greek names to take care of the seven widows, of the seven of the Hellenistic widows. There are seven deacons. So the seven is always related to those who were not us. Okay, so and wait till you see what's coming. Woo-hoo! All right. So and he was saying to them, verse 5, how many loaves do you have? And they said, seven. And he directed the people to sit, but not 50s and hundreds, because we're no longer in Israel. They just sat, period. Not in groups of 150s. They sat on the ground, and he did four things. He took the seven loaves, in case you forgot how many they were. He gave thanks, he broke, and he gave to the disciples. Verse 7, they also had a few small fish, and after he had blessed them, he ordered them to serve it all, and they were all what? Satisfied. And they picked up how many baskets? Except that this time the word is no longer kophinos. That's why your versions mostly say large baskets or Greek baskets or whatever, because we changed completely the Greek word. These are spuris now. These are the baskets of the Greeks. So here we have something very, very interesting. How many? They ate and they were all satisfied and they picked up 7 spuris. And there were left over and there were about 4,000 who were there. So now the numbers have changed. We have the 4 corners of the earth. We have the 7 pagan nations. And we got 1 and 2 and 3 and 4. I don't want to lose any of my pagan nations. 4, 5, 6, 7. And now we have everybody satisfied. So the summary then is 7 and 4 on the second feeding. And then we have the 4 verbs. And then we have satisfied. And now the basket is spuris. But only Mark, because the disciples are so dense in Mark, decides that needs to write what Jesus summarizes and puts the two together. Right before the miracle of the man who sees in 2 steps, come Jesus' summary. Verse 16. They began to discuss with one another the fact that they had no bread. Oh, man, these people are so clueless. Just like us in so many ways. And Jesus, aware of this, said to them, "Why do you discuss the fact that you have no bread? Do you not yet see or understand? Do you have a hardened heart? Having eyes, do you not see? And having ears, do you not hear? And do you not remember when I broke the 5 loaves for the 5,000? How many coffinos full of broken pieces you picked up?" And they said, 12. "And when I broke the 7 for the 4,000, how many spuris?" Changes the word. "How many spuris did you pick up?" They said, 7. And he said to them, "Do you not yet understand? Do you not understand that there's enough for everybody's bicycle?" So, all we have so far is a bunch of bread and we don't know what it means. But we know it means something. Because he has taken the time to take them from this side to the other side and to feed the 12 and have 12 coffinos and 7 spuris and putting it all together and then do a miracle in 2 steps before they understand that he's not just a man from God, but he's the one who was to die. But the riddle is revealed in chapter 14. By now, the hearer and the reader are very familiar with these verbs. But now you'll understand. Mark 14, 22. While they were eating, he did exactly the same 4 things. He took the bread and blessed the bread and broke the bread and gave the bread. And said, guess what? This is my body. This is my body that's broken for all of you. For you and you and you and you and you and you. See, this is the moment when Jesus does a breakthrough. And says, remember all those things on this side, on the other side? Do you remember all that, says Jesus? Well, this is the embrace that I have for the people on this side and on that side, for the black and the white and the green. There is enough for your brother who wears green hair. And there's enough for your child who has a pierced belly button. There is enough for everybody. You know, let me tell you this. I travel the world apologizing to young adults. You know, my generation left the church because they only told us there was enough bread for those who thought exactly and dressed exactly and preached exactly like a particular group of people. And Jesus said, no, 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 no. You people thought it was just for you? Oh, what a surprise you're going to have in heaven. You know, it's for all. It's for all. Well, and here it comes. I'm going to challenge you in a couple of ways. You know, if this narrative was written today, it would say 28 baskets. And the baskets are very important because the baskets are who you are and are your culture. So if this narrative was written today, we would have 28 baskets. And you know, I think I can recite most of them by heart. But Jesus says, never, ever, ever go out with empty baskets. If you're going to have 28 baskets, 28 doctrines in the Adventist church, make sure you're carrying the bread. Okay, make sure you're carrying the bread. And let me tell you why this is so important. This is so important because for many, many years we evangelized like this. And so we had people talking about the Sabbath without talking about Jesus. And you know, the other day I was together with the president of the North American Division, and he won't mind if I quote him verbatim. We do a lot of camp meetings together, and he said to the people in the camp meeting where I was, if you're talking about the Sabbath and you're not talking about Christ, stop preaching the Sabbath. And he said, if you are going to talk about the three angels' message and you're not going to talk about the everlasting gospel in the three angels' message, stop talking about the three angels' message. Because what happens is, if you give empty baskets, you are not giving Christ. And I'm not talking about find a little hole in the doctrine to stick Jesus in it so you can feel good about yourself. I am talking about the fact that we have one pearl of great price that in the Adventist church we look at from 28 different angles. But you better understand, if you're going to talk to me about the Sabbath and I'm not going to talk to me about Hebrews 4, 9, and 10, where the way that the Creator rested, I can rest in my redemption, then don't talk to me about the Sabbath. And don't talk to me about eschatology if you're not going to talk to me about the one who said, I am the eschatos. So let me tell you, if you're going to say, let's talk about eschatology, Jesus says, hey, by the way, I'm the first and the last. Did you know the Greek word for last was eschatos? Eschatology talks about me, says Jesus. Can somebody please talk about me? See, it's so different. It's so different to talk about the signs of the coming of Christ than talk about the signs of the coming of Christ. See how different that is? So something happens, and just in case you're wondering if we're making this whole thing up, this denomination was started to go on with the bells of the Reformation. And we forgot that on the way. And I'm going to bring, even though my preaching is biblical narratives, I'm just going to bring one quote from Ellen White. For you preachers, this is why we started this denomination. The sacrifice of Christ as an atonement for sin is the definite article. It's the great truth around which all other truths cluster. In order to be rightly understood and appreciated, every truth, did I say every truth in the Word of God, from Genesis to Revelation, must be studied in the light that streams from the cross of Calvary. Let's go on with the next part. Follows. I present before you the great, grand monument of mercy and regeneration, salvation and redemption, the Son of God uplifted on the cross. And check this out. This is to be the foundation of every discourse given by our ministers. If you ever take the pulpit and don't speak of the cross of Christ, that day the pulpit was not for you. Yeah. If you ever take the pulpit and don't speak of the cross of Christ, that day the pulpit was not for you. Whether it's Sabbath or sanctuary or the story of Esther or the story of David, somewhere along the line you have to come to the plan of redemption, because that's why the Bible was written, from Genesis to Revelation. If somebody walks to your church for only one time ever, they have to hear the gospel of Jesus Christ. Woo! So my first challenge is, don't go out with empty baskets. My second challenge is, you don't have to deny other people's their identity in order to keep yours. We have much to bring to the Protestant and evangelical table, and we can keep our own identity. You don't need to call everybody else's names. Because they, you know, our policy, our working policy, is that we take our Protestant brothers and sisters as people who are also lifting up Christ, that he may draw all people to himself. So don't get this air of superiority. This is why 99 cents of every dollar go to make a Christian change denominations. Only 1 cent per evangelistic dollar goes to those who do not know Christ. You know why people were amazed when they met Jesus? Because there was enough for everybody's bicycle. So that's why we keep finding this word amazed, amazed. And the centurion was amazed. And everybody was amazed because there was enough for their bicycle. And if you have a child that is outside the church right now, and the way you explain God to them was with empty baskets, call them on the phone and ask them for forgiveness. It will go a long way. Jesus said, every time you give the bread, remember, this is my body that was broken for you, and there's enough for the 5,000 and for the 4,000. There's enough for the 12 baskets and for the 7 baskets. I would give everything I own for you to get this message today. Let's watch the video that I want to end before I do the final words, of how everybody was amazed when they met Jesus because there was enough for their bicycle.
Stand in wonder once again. Your grace still amazes me. Your love is still a mystery each day. Your grace still amazes me.
May every doctrine be a basket filled with bread. May every doctrine be a straw through which you drink the living water. What is the core? What is the truth? Well, the truth is a person, and he said, I am the truth. So may this be a turning point, perhaps, new hermeneutical glasses to interpret from Genesis to Revelation in the light that streams from Calvary. And there turns out there is enough for this side and the other side. It turns out there is enough for young and old and black and white and men and women. Go figure. There is enough for everybody. And I have become convinced that there is enough for my bicycle. And that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
To sing all to Jesus, I surrender. Let's just think about those words as we sing it. I surrender all. The chorus again.
I surrender.
And now may the bread of satisfaction fill you. May you know that there's enough for everyone, even for you and for me. May you know that he died and that he's coming back. And may you go out of this place to preach loudly the everlasting gospel. In Jesus, our bread, in his name, amen. The what?
I looked up Jesus 101. I didn't say it.
We have an app. Oh, the.